Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining me on this, our very first show of our summer session of Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. I'm your host, Maria Wall, and I wanted to jump right into the show this evening because how befitting for our first show that I have a very special guest with us this evening, Mrs. Carolyn Zunno is here, and she's the founder of SaveTheTeens.com. I'm sure that many of you during the course of your day or the week, you either hear it on your local news or see it on the internet, or you actually even know someone who could have gone through this, but the media is always giving us information that another young person has taken his or her life for whatever reason. And for that reason today, our very first guest for our summer season is Carolyn Zunno. And Carolyn lost her son Cameron in 2005 to the demons that occupied his mind. And her hope is by founding her organization that her story and experiences can help other parents, teachers, mentors, or even other teens themselves to be more aware of the signs and symptoms of teen depression and substance abuse. So with that said, I would like to welcome Carolyn to our show. Carolyn, welcome to Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Maria. I appreciate my. This is my first radio interview so far.
Oh, really?
So I'm excited. Yeah.
Well, this is the first all the way around. Well, I'm so glad that you decided to join me here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. For the last 2 weeks, I was on vacation getting this together, and then I fell ill last week. So please forgive me, as I told you earlier. I'm still trying to get my voice back, but we are going to jump right in because when you and I had initially started to converse, I knew that you were someone that I needed to have on this show because teen suicides and these issues that your organization specifically deals with is it's on the rise. And, you know, I'd like for you to tell me a little bit more about how your organization, Save the Teens, had come about.
Okay. Actually, it started with me doing research after my son died. I am a writer. I also have a book when I'll work up to that. But after my son died, I did a lot of research on depression, teen depression. I'm like, well, why on earth, why are teens depressed? They have everything. But I also did research on suicide because if you, never lost someone to suicide, well, you have lots of questions about suicide. So I did that, and I ended up doing lots of research for a good year, which helped me keep my sanity after his death. And about a year after, I looked and I had this huge pile of papers from all my research. I'm like, wow, I have got enough information now for a book. So, I wrote the book. It took a while, and then the editing process, and then getting it published. But it's finally here, so.
Oh, well, that's, that's one of the greatest motivations, again. That's what this show is about, taking our hurts and turning them into something positive and doing something positive, with that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
What's the name of your book?
Oh, it's easy. Save the Teens. preventing suicide. Yeah, preventing suicide, depression, and addiction.
And people can pick that up where?
It's on for sale on my website and at Amazon.com, and then wherever I am, you know, am speaking, but that's sort of limited right this minute.
Right. Well, hopefully our listeners will support you and get your book, because it's chock full of good information that we'll be discussing, a lot of it tonight. But again, this is such a explosive topic right now that I'm going to jump right in and ask you, even now, let's say, your book is Save the Teens, but have, statistics were saying that now we have even the younger preteens or the tweens that are falling prey to the same ailments. And if you could share with us what some of the major symptoms are and signs that we should be looking for these types of red flags.
Sure. Depression in general, but, we'll deal with teens mostly. I guess one of the biggest things is if the grades are changed. If you have an A-B student and you watch their grades just bottom out, that's a big clue right there. You should be asking why and not just shrug it off and tell them to do better. Find out why. If their usual activities, say maybe a girl likes to go to the mall, every weekend with her girlfriends, and she quits doing that, you got to find out why. That's not normal. Or the son usually plays soccer, loves soccer, and he doesn't care about playing soccer anymore. These are all, you've got to figure out why. You got to get to the bottom and ask. Maybe it's just something little. But if the several of these symptoms, there's many more, loss of hope, et cetera, last more than 2 weeks, then you really, really got to check into it, because that's definitely a sign of depression if it lasts more than 2 weeks.
Right. I do notice that every time I read about it or see it in the media, when they interview the parents, the very first thing that they say is, I just didn't see the signs, or I didn't realize, or when I figured it out, it was too late.
That's the whole basis for me doing this, because I've heard that over and over in support groups, survivor of suicide support groups. I've heard parents say, if only I'd seen the signs. So I'm like, aha, there's my goal. I'm going to go teach parents, teachers, grandparents, whoever, the signs. And I go and I speak, and hopefully, I can touch a few of them, if not all of them. I'm afraid a lot of parents still have blinders on.
That I'm noticing, that whether, in this economy, some parents are just too busy now to even notice their children, and their children are going unnoticed.
I know.
And that's sad in itself, but, for those parents who maybe have on blinders now, and you're going to hear this show either live or in the archives, grab a seat, sit down, and listen for the next, 50 minutes or so, because you really do need to hear what Carolyn has to say. So could you give us some of those the parents. How do they, I guess, get through to the children? Because now there seems to be this big wall between the parents being able to communicate with their children. And I'm noticing that, just across the board, period. So are there certain things that the parent can do to help their children to open up to them?
Well, there are some things you can do. There's one thing is to stay involved with your kids. And, you just mentioned that. Lots of times you have, there may be, what, 5 kids in a family. I mean, I came from one of those families. I just sort of felt like the invisible kid because I was the middle kid.
Oh.
I mean, that was good and bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you can get away with some things, right?
Yeah.
But, so lots of times the teens, we assume they're doing okay, and, you know, you pay your attention to the younger kids. I'm sure it happens all the time. I only had one child, so I just assume, I saw it in my own family. But you can, parents need to be involved, have a relationship with their kid, their teen. And one really, really simple thing is, and I've seen research on this, just sitting down every night or as many nights as you can and have dinner together at a table, not watching TV. I mean, how simple is that? It's very simple.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to cook a meal. You can bring your fast food home if that's what you eat, but just sit down and have a conversation. But I do warn, because we used to do that with my son, but we would jump right in and start asking him all the questions. Well, have you done this homework? Have you done that? Have you done? And finally, he put his foot down and goes, if you're just going to badger me like this, I'm not going to eat with you. So we're like,
right.
Oh, true. That's what we were doing. So I sort of tell parents, you know, don't badger them. Let the conversation happen. So
that's an excellent point, because when you said, you know, have dinner, I'm thinking, yeah, have dinner. And like, how was your day? How's homework?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and a lot of times we as the parent now put ourselves in the shoes that we were in when we were the teens. And we knew how it felt when our parents did it to us. And then now that we're the parent, many times we don't realize that we're just continuing that vicious cycle.
I know.
And, you know, it's just, or family, I try to promote in my nonprofit, I try to have what we call family fun night. And, you know, we work out of a community center. We have families come in and play board games, old-fashioned board games that causes you to communicate with one another,
mm-hmm.
you know, not electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, you know, in this technological age, you know, a lot of parents don't want to get into the texting and all of that, but sometimes, now I don't know if you would agree, is that a good way to try to reach out to your children as well?
It's still a conversation. You're in touch with your kid. I mean, I used to text back and forth with my son.
And,
we were in contact. Of course, you know, I guess I need to back up and tell people, well, if I had this relationship with my son, what happened?
Right.
But can I back up for...
Yeah, because that was going to be my next question. Like, let's go back a minute so we can see where that glitch came in that system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cameron's birth dad is what I should call him, who was my first husband. He died... I guess he was about 45, and Cameron was 15 years old. We were divorced when Cameron was like 2. So that, his dad's death deeply impacted him. And that's when I started seeing signs of violence and depression. And unfortunately, boys and men, I think, do not know how to grieve properly.
Right.
So, you know, here he was in this depression, and then he started abusing drugs. That was, you know, self-medicating. Well, believe me, he went to many therapists, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. So he went through the gamut, you know, of us trying to help him along. So that's what happened. He lost his dad, and that's when he was classified. He had major depression and substance abuse disorder.
Now, when you brought up the substance abuse,
mm-hmm.
were there any signs that you could see that he could possibly be abusing drugs? And did you have a like a plan in effect where you could, in essence, do like a search and destroy mission to see if you could find any of the places where he may have been stashing or hiding any type of drugs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot of this is in the books. I mean, it's like the 3 years of this confusing life. But it's not a memoir in my book. It's research and some of Cameron's writings. But, yes, we did discover drugs in a variety of different ways. He ended, his drug of choice was methamphetamine. And we did get him into rehab, and we got him cleaned up. But the counselor there said, unfortunately, people will go back and use meth again in about 6 months' time.
Wow.
And he did. And he didn't hear that, but he did. And then he just got deeper and deeper into it. He turned 18, and, you know, he knew his rights, and he was out of control.
Right.
Unfortunately.
But for you, it's pretty safe to say that you did all of the right things before he was emancipated.
Yeah.
And, you know, once he turned 18 and thought that he was an adult,
yeah,
you know,
he can make his own decisions, he thought.
Yeah. And do you think that he, what is maybe in the book, but do you think that he wanted to commit suicide to get away?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he was having relationship issues at the time. And last week I was in Texas promoting my book and seeing a lot of old friends because that's where we were living at the time. And I actually got a chance to see his counselor from rehab. She's not at the same place now, but she told me, she said in her heart of hearts, she said if Cameron had not been doing meth, that she is, you know, feels sure that he would have, you know, seen his way through his problems. And it's just meth really changes your mental, your thinking. Unlike heroin or any other drug, meth just really makes you think differently, wrong.
Right.
So that made me feel good and bad.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah, I can only imagine. You know, it must have been a little bit disheartening to you when, you know, sometimes, and for our listeners, if you'd like to call in and speak with Carolyn, the number is 646-478-4726. And for those in our chat room, if you'd like to post a question or comment, please do so, and I will read it on air. You know, when I think that for our listeners, this is once again an example that you can do everything right or try to do the best that you can with the resources that you have available. And sometimes the end is still very saddening and negative. And a lot of times, do you find that some of the parents that you had come across take that burden on themselves? And just like you turned your situation around and used it for something positive, do you find that a lot of these parents then fall into their own deep depression and guilt? And sometimes I know that from what I've just, the little bit of research that I've done, because, you know, I hear it, and it's something that I don't keep in the forefront of my mind as much as I should. But so a lot of times these parents have other children. And have you found that sometimes when the parents take this burden on themselves and they don't know how to let go, which is my next question for you, I believe, would be, how did you learn how to let go and combat not feeling, you know, taking that guilt on yourself and blaming yourself for his decision to take his own life?
The whole suicide issue. I knew what my husband and I did to help Cameron, so I mean, we did a lot, and his doctors knew we did everything we could. But anyone that loses someone to suicide, you have a whirlwind of whys going through your head just nonstop for a good year. A good year that happens. But one thing that helped me through that was I would get up every morning and journal. You know, I would get all those whys on paper. But then I was almost able to breathe. I could, okay, I don't know why, but here's what I think could have been, or, you know, most of that I couldn't have changed. One lady asked me last week, she goes, well, was there something you could have done differently so he wouldn't have suffered from depression? I'm like, no, because I couldn't help his dad dying. That's where it really kicked off.
Right.
So that's one thing I really want to stress to parents, too, is, you know, it's something, things that set up depression, and relationships are a huge, huge thing. Too many times kids will take their life if they're, you know, they broke up with their boyfriend or girlfriend. I know as adults we're like, well, that's silly. But if you can put your place back when you were a teenager, that was pretty devastating.
Right.
And some kids can't see beyond the hurt now. They can't see in the next week. Their brains are still maturing. So there's
right.
the relationship issues, and then there's a death, like my son suffered. So it doesn't have just to be a parent. It could be a friend. It could be a pet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of these kids get pets when they're, you know, 3 years old, and all of a sudden their pet dies when they're, you know, what, dogs live forever now, it seems like. Yeah, they live a long time. So that's
mm-hmm.
like their best buddy just died. So, you know, you can't brush that one off easily either.
Right.
There's several things. I guess you do truly have to be in touch with your kid.
Right.
But yeah, the whole suicide thing is really hard. And I guess I should mention I'm also a facilitator for a suicide support group, which helps me and it helps others because I started going to them. I guess maybe a month after my son's death,
mm-hmm.
and it's a safe place for people to go and talk about suicide.
Right.
Now you can't talk to your neighbor about suicide because they don't understand it.
Right.
Or they may think you're mentally ill if someone you lost to suicide. There's a whole
right.
stigma surrounding suicide.
Right.
That's another
really?
Whole topic.
Yeah, it's pretty safe to say that suicide is not contagious and it doesn't necessarily run in a family. Because
no, but they
many...
can... They can mm-hmm. look back and see if there's mental illness in a family. There's a
right.
big genetic issue.
Right. But then a lot of times there are external factors such as nowadays the biggest thing is bullying.
It's one of them, yep.
Yeah, that's big in this area now. It's a big topic on our local news almost every day.
Yeah. Yeah, it is
and,
here too, and that's good.
You know, but again, you know, it's a topic where we hear about it, but in the mm-hmm. same breath, I haven't really seen a lot of information on what to do about it. You know, these children are being switched from one school to another, and then they
mm-hmm.
show up on TV with bruises where they've been beaten up, or in some cases, they've actually... unfortunately killed the child, and then in others the children took their lives
because mm-hmm, they couldn't handle it anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the
well, you know,
the infamous mm-hmm.
a lot of times these bullies are suffering from depression. Mm.
Yeah,
because yeah, depression will make you quite violent
because
so,
I think that they want the people around them to feel the misery that they feel.
Could be.
That's another
whole issue again.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this
bullies.
Is why, you know, this is one of these topics that we could talk on forever because
exactly.
there's so many, you know, different factors that could play into this.
Yeah.
But what are some of the places that, if you could share, that you found where your son had hid his private stock of drugs?
Oh my gosh. He was clever. I think drug addicts in general are quite clever with their drugs.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Let's see. He had one of those, there's a lot of those lights out now. I have it where I'm sitting right now. It has all the different arms and the different lights on them. You know, this sort
mm-hmm.
of looks like an octopus. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but he had a hat hanging on one of the little lights. And then for some reason, why has he got a hat here? And I looked in the hat, and there was a broken glass pipe that they used to smoke
right.
meth. Okay, well, that wasn't very well hidden, but
right.
then you can look in shoe boxes, all kinds of boxes, way at the back of their closet,
mm-hmm.
you know, where they think you're not going to look.
Right.
Another place for him, which I don't think I found drugs. I might have found baggies or something.
Right.
They'll open up seams and pillows and stash little baggies in there. You know, I never did find drugs. I don't know why, but I found the baggies, and that was evidence enough.
Right.
They push it far away, and I've heard other parents say, well, you should look in their backpacks, too, which brings up the whole topic of parents have a right to check their kids if they suspect they're doing, suspect their kids' rooms if they suspect they're doing drugs.
Right.
You know, the kid may not like it, but they're not paying rent. Right?
Well, and I think that a lot of times parents don't necessarily, now maybe some of our listeners may not agree with this, but sometimes when the kids are at school and you're straightening up their room or whatever, you know, sometimes it's good to just check because this
sure.
isn't really invading their privacy. This is saving their lives. There's a difference.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
you're exactly
parents
right.
need to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, and I'm glad that you brought up the fact that even though you said that particular pipe wasn't hidden very well, sometimes children will hide things in plain view.
Right.
Because it's so obvious, we tend to overlook it.
I know.
So I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, parents, some of the listeners now may think, you know what, they bought home this box or this little trinket box and they keep it on
uh-huh.
their little dresser or wherever, and, you know, I never go in it.
Right.
And so for all of our listeners, you know, sometimes it's hidden in plain view. If they keep a favorite jacket, you know.
Yeah.
That they take with them no matter what the temperature is outside and, you know, the pockets seem a little bit heavy. You would want to know what's in those pockets, I would think. You know. But, you know, that was interesting, you know, to think to mention that it was right there in plain view.
Almost plain view. But
yeah.
I was going to say, too, if you happen to be sniffing around, if you see knives in the room, there's, you know, cutting is still popular.
Right.
You know, self-mutilation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, parents should wonder if there's knives or a knife in their bedroom. You know, I don't have a knife in my bedroom. Why would a teen have a knife in their bedroom? That's scissors you're supposed to watch for, too. But, you know, you could use scissors for something. Of course,
right.
I don't think I have any of those in my bedroom either, but anyway.
Right.
And cutting, they say, they actually, girls have cutting parties, which is
wow.
sad. Yeah, they get together and teach each other how to cut themselves. But it's a way they can control their pain, so I hear. Whereas depression
oh, okay.
is hard to control. I know.
And then again, with the parents, I guess that they would, parents, teachers, whomever, you would know that cutting, I'm sure that you would see signs of that because the children would have marks on their bodies.
You know, they hide those too. They hide them.
You know, again, but I would think that if it's 101 degrees outside, and
yeah.
they're covered up, you know, in a turtleneck.
Yeah, you're getting
down,
the idea.
You know,
right, you got to ask
think,
why.
Right. You know, and then if they're quick to, you know, if they're going in to take a shower or bath and they're covered up like they never used to be, you know, prior to, or if their eating habits have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
just things like that, I would think that, you know, I only had one child as well, and he's grown and gone, but I do have two grandchildren.
Yeah,
so these,
you see them.
You know, this is good because it's waking me up to think, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I know that their parents listen all the time to the show. So, you know, for even young parents out here, even if you have younger children, sometimes these symptoms, you know, they can start in, like I said, the preteens or the tweens
yeah.
and then move on from there.
That's right.
And
then it just gets worse and worse if you're not getting help for them. And they can't recover
yeah.
from themselves. I don't know how many people have, you know, actually experienced true depression. Of course, I did some after my son died. And I would have days where you would just get so deep in your depression that you don't consider asking for help. You don't think about it.
Right.
So here's teens walking around feeling that way. That just kills me to think about that. Oh,
right.
You know, day in and day out.
Yeah. And they don't express their feelings. I know.
Well, they don't realize it.
Yeah. And I had gone through my bout with depression a few years ago. And I knew what it felt like to me when I could walk outside on a beautiful sunny day and not feel the warmth of the sun on my face. It was just
mm-hmm.
cold and numb, you know, or I just didn't see... you know, hear the birds chirping anymore, and I would come home or, you know, I'm riding down the street, and I just wander off somewhere, and then I'm home before I know it, but I can't remember how I got there. And the depression had started to be what they call, what is it, dissociative disorder or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where you're starting to lose sight of yourself.
Yeah.
And I was an adult.
Right.
And it was hard for me to express it and move on. So one can only imagine what younger people go through. And I know that the young person's brain alone
right.
is not mature until they're almost, what, a quarter of a century old or something?
25 is the supposedly magic number. That's a long time.
Yeah. So,
that's,
you know, they're not
take
thinking.
Risk. Yeah, they take all these risks because the parts that your prefrontal cortex is where
mm-hmm.
the decision making's going on, and that's the part that takes forever to mature. So they go out and do stupid stuff, like drive without their seatbelts on. We have so many kids here that die in car accidents because they didn't have a seatbelt on. I mean, what a simple thing to do. They're just, they don't
yeah.
think about the consequences.
Yeah. I don't know if your book touches on it, but maybe you have the information on it. Another thing is that even though we've been talking about, you know, individual issues, suicide pacts are also on the rise.
Not really. I don't think it's on the rise. Not from what I've read. Maybe where you are.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it's... Like I said, I hear bits and pieces of things, and, you know, if I hear about one or two of them, then it's too much. And,
sure.
You know, it's...
But you know what? Most times, teenage suicide doesn't even hit the paper or the news, but a car accident does.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the whole thing is touchy.
Yeah. Now,
yeah,
I'll tell you
it
here...
Is.
You know, in the local news, a lot of times we'll hear about when the students are committing suicide after they've been cyberbullied.
Right.
That's the latest thing.
Right.
And And with that incident, of course, the parents' excuse is always, I didn't want to invade their privacy on the computer, and I didn't know.
If their kid has a Facebook page, they better be a friend of their kid on Facebook, so I have to say. They need to know what they're doing.
Exactly.
God. And if their kid won't be a friend with them, then they don't need a Facebook page, right?
Hey. It's to keep them, once again, it's not invading their privacy, it's saving their lives.
Exactly.
And, you know, you never know until it's too late.
And you don't want to go there. Right.
And, you know, we as parents, we need to understand that it is our job to notice these little things and inconsistencies and changes in their patterns and habits. And, you know, I just, you know, I can sit up there all night and just wreck my brain and think of things that, you know, some of my friends who have lost their children to suicide.
Yeah.
I even sit back and think, you know, maybe, now I will say that sometimes I will bring out, if I say, you know, well, that's odd. Why are they hanging out with this type of person now? What happened to them being a straight-A student? And sometimes parents will ignore the changes or the signs and say, oh, they're just going through a phase. And I'm sure that, I don't know whether you would agree that, you know, sometimes parents need to understand that it's not just a normal phase of them maturing or going through another phase of their natural evolution. It's a phase where they've either gotten involved with the wrong group of people or something has triggered them into that depression. And
If they're not getting attention from their parents at home, they get it from their peers. And,
right.
You know, the peers, their friends don't have all the correct answers. I'm not saying the parents
right.
wish they had all the right answers. I mean, I wish I did. But their friends sure don't. Oh, you don't feel good? Here, take this pill. Maybe that'll make you feel better, right? You know, that's not good. They share their drug experiences.
Right.
Once again, the parents need to be there and help guide them so they don't turn to their friends or find some friends that do sympathize with them.
Right. Because you know that what's the old adage? It's easier to get into trouble than it is to get out. And, you know, they say people find courage in the, you know, the vice could be alcohol, you know, courage in a bottle. It makes them feel invincible. And, you know, when they get that first taste of the alcohol or the drugs, you know, and they think that, wow, I feel good until I come down from that high.
Yeah.
And each time you come down, that crash gets more severe.
Yeah, it leads to depression generally.
Right.
Because alcohol is a depressant. Well, yeah, it makes you feel good at first, though, huh?
Mm-hmm. But now, a lot of people, you said that you were a facilitator for a
support group.
Yeah. And there are, I know in your area alone, I'm sure, but there are many 800 numbers and hotlines that people can call anonymously, correct? Where, you know, the parents and or the children can talk about it.
Sure.
Because there's one thing that I've noticed through doing healing through hurt is that a lot of people will sit in the chat and listen, or they will, you know, chime in and listen over the internet or the phone, but they don't want anyone to hear their voice.
Right.
Because they're afraid that someone may recognize them.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll get emails later, you know, where people have their opinions and things, but, you know, they're afraid that, you know, for some reason, you know, people will think differently of them in a negative way if they, you know, found out that they had these types of problems in their home.
Yeah.
So do you, you know, think that people need to understand that it's a serious issue? And sometimes if they reach out to others, you know, help may be right there next door in their own neighborhood.
I can give you one of those numbers. It's one that's etched in my head for some reason.
Oh, great.
It's 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K.
That's 1-800-273-TALK,
T-A-L-K. Yeah. Yeah, in case my southern accent was too strong, right? I know, it gets that way.
That's for adults and teens, correct?
Or
yeah.
That's right. But, you know, people can get help. They can go to their doctor and talk to them about what they suspect from their teen, or they can go to a minister, or if they already have a therapist, or if they don't, then I bet they have a friend that has a therapist. And, you know, just go in and talk. And
right.
It's not hard to do.
And again, you know, they have to humble themselves and take that leap and let someone
right.
know that there is a problem.
Yeah,
and,
I had, more parents ask me after Cameron died, well, what do I do? You know, they discover their kids are doing drugs or depressed. What do I do? That's because when I suspected Cameron was doing drugs, I freaked out. I didn't know what to do. You don't know what to do when it hits you. You just don't. It's amazing.
Right.
There are books, you know, that offer help, and it's funny, I ran across a book recently that I had bought when Cameron was a teenager about depressed teens. I didn't finish reading it, and I could tell now when I read it that Cameron had picked it up, and he was reading it, but I guess neither one of us finished or didn't think it applied to him. I don't know. That's a little scary.
Right. So, and again, that goes back to the statement that I had made earlier that, you know, I tend to dismiss it, you know. Oh, well, you know, I mean, I know that it happens, and I know that we should be looking for the signs, but you get so caught up
in
what I'm doing in life that, you know, they just fade into the background. And, you know, it's an issue that we need to wake up on.
Losing a teenager is so frustrating, because especially when they got, you know, my son was getting ready to start college the next week, and he seemed real hopeful in a journal that he was writing that week. Of course, I didn't see that till later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and he went to the doctors, and I assumed the doctors would make him better. Of course, they tried. You know, they did try.
Right.
Took antidepressants, and when he didn't do meth, the antidepressants worked.
Right.
But as soon as you do, you know, some kind of illegal substance, that just wipes out the other. Doesn't do any good.
Well,
yeah. It's important to pay attention to the signs.
And, you know, could you go over some of those signs again for our listeners? Because we can't reiterate it enough. Because they need to hear it again and again. So what are some of the
okay.
You know?
I did bring the book one because there are so many, I'm afraid. Which is it's good to know there are a lot. All right, wait a minute. That goes to addiction. Here's one that, you know, you probably don't think about. I've forgotten to put it in the book until the lady I was working with, her son came in and said, have you mentioned anything in there about music? I'm like, no, but that is a really good thing. Because my son used to listen to very upbeat, happy music,
mm-hmm.
and then it switched. It switched to that very down, depressing stuff.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, all kids have iPods or some form of music stuck in their ear now, right?
Right.
So, I mean, how easy is it to pull one out of their ear and just listen to what they're listening to?
Right.
If it's depressing music, then that's just going to keep them down in that depression. So music, that's one. A change in their daily routines or interests, like sleeping more than usual or less than usual. If they can't sleep, kids need to be sleeping, and they're not anymore. Poor school performance, or they're getting in trouble at school. You know, maybe
mm-hmm.
Who knows, they're starting fights at school. That's not good. Suicidal thoughts. If they say, you know, you'd be better off without me, or I'm just going to kill myself. I still say, if you're happy, you're not going to say something like that. You're probably depressed if you're saying that. Overreaction to criticism. They get, you know, you just suggest something and they fly off the handle saying you're mean to me, or, you know, just over criticism.
Right.
Let's see. Anger, worry, and anxiety. Kids that are, they're anxious about something and they don't know what.
Right.
Physical symptoms that no amount of over-the-counter drugs will fix, like a headache or stomach ache. That could be depression. An irrational negative self-concept, which means, my son is a great example of this. Cameron was an excellent photographer, graphic design artist. He wrote as well. He was one of these very creative people.
Mm-hmm.
But in high school, his graphic design teacher said, you should enter some of your photography, you know, lay it out as an ad and enter it into, I think it's called Skills USA.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, no, my stuff's not good enough. But she pushed him into doing it, and of course he won a blue ribbon. He still didn't think he was good enough. So, yeah, that's a good one there. Self-injury, weight loss or gain,
mm-hmm.
you know, real noticeable one, not a little bit.
Right.
The physical ailments, drug use, that's huge. There's your cycle of depression and drug use, and, you know, let's take some more drugs to make me feel better, and just goes on and on.
Right.
Witnessing violence. That could go hand in hand with the bullying. Or a teen's watching his dad beat up his mom and he can't do anything about it. He's depressed,
right.
but he doesn't know what to do. Relationship violence.
Right.
Teens feeling neglected. Yeah, because of their younger siblings take up all the time, right? Oh, divorce.
Right, that's a good one.
Yeah. Divorce is big. For many, many reasons, obviously, but kids don't like change. We know that, right?
Right.
When a divorce comes along, oh, they might get a new parent. They might get a new home. They might have to go to a new school. Wow,
right.
That's a lot of change.
New siblings, you know. And
oh, yeah, that's it. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, wow.
Yeah,
I know. It's a lot. It is a
yeah.
lot.
Divorce is hard on a kid.
Sometimes
it has to happen. We know that.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the children do suffer in that. I'm in the middle of that now. And she's not even my child, but she's my stepdaughter. And
mm-hmm.
she's not she's very unhappy with her father and even more unhappy with the fact that I had to sit her down and tell her that there was no hope of a reconciliation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, her thing is, you'll always be my Mama Maria.
Mm-hmm.
But she was not happy about that. And
lately
she's been really acting out in school and getting worse mm-hmm. and it's escalating. So, you know.
Sounds like something you need to be watching, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to call up her father and talk to him after the show tonight and, you know, let him know that, you know, just so odd that tonight this was our show. And you know, I had been telling him that he needed to reconnect with her because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're getting divorced because of adultery. And, mm-hmm. you know, she knew the person. You know, she had an affair with a neighbor of mine, and he's a contractor. And she used to accompany him to the house when he was working there on the weekends. And she was the one that initially said that woman wanted, you know, her father, my husband.
Oh.
And, you know, it wasn't until this year that he came clean to her and he said why we were getting a divorce. And who it was, and actually I think she actually figured it out on her own, which wasn't good, because he should have come clean long before she figured it out. And, you know, she was not happy. And I told him, you need to sit down with her and talk it out. It is what it is, but, you know, I tried to tell her all that I could. I said, you know, after this divorce, you know, this other woman may end up being in his life in some way.
Right.
And she would have to be prepared to deal with that. But, you know, each week she got expelled from school. She's getting more abrasive and combat, you know, she's in that combat mode. And, you know, after speaking with you tonight, I think maybe he needs to step up his game a little bit, him and her, you know, her mother.
Yeah, but you can help too if she trusts you. You can be like a mentor to her, you know?
You know, I mean, I'm there as a listening ear, but when you have the biological mother and my soon-to-be ex-husband who are like War of the Roses themselves, you know, she's kind of in the middle of a bad situation. And when we were together, she could come here every other weekend and have that stability. I had her in, you know, basketball, and I would take her to the center where my nonprofit works out of, and she could go swimming sometimes, and we could have that girl talk time. And she lost all of that. So now she's back to the war zone.
Yeah, but she doesn't have to lose you, does she? Come on.
You know, she's not losing me totally, but, again, there's other factors like, you know, if the mother and father are at war, then the mother will take it out and, you know, put me in the middle, and it just gets to be a big mess.
Right.
So, you know, it's disheartening all the way around.
Yeah. And it happens to a lot of families.
Right, right. And, you know, a lot of my listeners have been following my divorce. My husband actually just served Sunday, this past Sunday. So it finally became real to him and the neighbor that, you know, they've destroyed a marriage. But I say nothing from nothing is nothing. So my concern is that the child is okay.
Yeah.
That she's okay. And, you know, of course, me being just a stepmom, I can only do but so much. So I try to push her father to, you know, step up to the plate and do more.
Right.
Before
it
gets to a different level. So, again, we have about 7 minutes, so tell us again. Your website is www.
It's Save the Teens, but there needs to be a dash in between Save and the Teens.
Right, so it's www.save-the-teens.com. .com. And your book is the same name.
It is called Save the Teens,
And they can pick that up on the website and on Amazon.
Yep, that's good information.
The Save the Teen by Carolyn Zeno. And, again, for those of you listening tonight, re-listen to the show. The archives will be up for a very long time. It will be a feature show for a while. So listen. Don't just hear us speaking tonight. Listen to what Carolyn had to say, because she brought up some things that even I had not thought about. And remember that you're not invading your child's privacy. You're trying to save your child's life. And if you feel as though you're really invading that child's privacy, again, as you had stated, Carolyn, having dinner, and not a bashing dinner, but a friendly family dinner. And sometimes maybe, I'm sure, maybe you would agree to let the child guide the conversation.
Right.
And see what they want to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, because our babies are dying. And, you know, as you said, you kept your journal and you wrote down the what ifs and the whys. Mm-hmm. And, of course, for our listeners, that does help you when you write things out. You're not holding it in anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you get it out of your system, and it will help you to move on after the fact. But, you know, it's still disheartening to know that we as the adults are never supposed to outlive our children.
Yeah, well, that's a grand plan, isn't it?
You know, it's and sometimes, it, like just as you did everything right, and it still turned out very wrong. So sometimes for our listeners, you may do everything right, so it may not be your fault. And for those listeners who are still sleeping on that rock, it's time for you to roll from under that rock, or it's time for you to open your eyes. Because, you know, a lot of times we walk around with, how do they say, our eyes wide shut. And we don't want to see what's going on. And by the time we do, we take those blinders off. It's too late.
Okay.
So, you know, it's just, it's time to wake up. And what was that number again? The 800 number again? We could
1-800-273-TALK.
1-800-273-TALK. If you're an adult who needs to speak with someone.
Yeah, asking about mental illness or suicide, those type of issues. Probably drug abuse too. Yeah.
You know, give them a call. It's an 800 number, so there's no excuse why you can't call. It's toll-free. Talk to someone. And if you can, give the number to your child. Just walk into their room and say, here, in case you need that, call them whenever you want. And sometimes you let the child make that decision. And if that doesn't work, then you always have contingency plans in place. And, you know, we have about 2 minutes, Carolyn, if you want to have any closing, you know, comments for our listeners.
Well, I still say that the best way to, you know, keep your teen alive is to reconnect with them if you've lost them. Just because they're 6 feet tall, don't think that they're 30 years old. Pretend they're 6 years old. Be there for them. Help them through life. It's confusing. You have to remember how you were when you were a teenager. Life was confusing. It still is, probably more so. So be there for them. Reconnect.
So that's it.
Save the teens.
The major thing is to reconnect. Learn how to communicate and have fun with them. Learn how to do that.
Yeah, but teenagers are fun.
Yeah. But, Carolyn, I want to thank you so much for joining me this evening for Healing Through Herd Talk Radio. You really opened up my eyes. And, again, for those of you, you can visit Carolyn's site at www.save-the-teens.com for more information. And, Carolyn, it's been great speaking with you, and I'm sure I'll be calling on you again soon.
All right.
Thank you so much for joining us this evening on Healing Through Herd Talk Radio. And ladies and gentlemen, do visit her site, and it's chock full of good information, and you get a chance to pick up her book, do so. And Carolyn, thank you again, and I can't thank you enough. So we'll be in touch.
Thanks for giving me the time.
Thank you, and you have a great, great evening.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. As always, we'd like to remind you that the views, statements, and or comments of show guests, callers, or hosts do not necessarily reflect the views or beliefs of the Wall Foundation Incorporated or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. These comments are those of our guests, callers, and hosts alone Therefore, the Wall Foundation Incorporated and or Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio is not party to nor liable for resolution of issues between show guests, callers, hosts, and or listeners. I want to thank you.
We are now here on our after show, and I wanted to thank you all for joining us this evening with our special guest, Carolyn Zeno. Again, her website is www.save-the-teens.com, and you can also pick up her book, To Save the Teens, at the website or Amazon.com. Next week, we'll be bringing you another dynamic guest. Do check back often on our website for our blog to see all of our upcoming guests. And I want to thank all of our guests in our chat room this evening for joining us for Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio. If you have any questions about our show or comments, you can give us a call at 443-865-4211, or you can always email us at contact@thewallfoundationinc.org. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Healing Through Hurt Talk Radio, and we will be back again same time next week with another dynamic guest. Next week, our guest will be Diane Teagarden. She is the author of the book, Getting Out of Limbo, a self-help divorce book for women. Again, that's Diane Teagarden, and she will be our guest next week. And again, make sure that you check out Carolyn's website and pick up a copy of her book, because teen suicide, depression, and abuse is a serious issue. And it's an issue that we really do need to address. Until next week, you have a great week. Be blessed. And I'm your host, Maria Wall. I will see you then.